Letter One of The Outcast. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by expatriate in Bangor, Maine. The Outcast by William Winwood Reed. Letter One. My dear Frank, I welcome you back to your native land, and take it for granted that you and Ellen are tired enough of traveling. Life in a strange country is always artificial. It seems to me like being at a play, and constant change becomes monotonous after a time. I hear from Ellen that she intends to stop in London a week before joining you at home, and I shall reserve till then my latest budget of news about the tenants and the harvest and the pets and the penny readings, etc. Just now I can think of little else but the tragedy at Dr. Scott's, some account of which no doubt you have seen in the papers. But I will tell you the whole story. Arthur Elliott was the only son of a wealthy landed proprietor, one of my nearest neighbors, and a brother magistrate. Arthur had a most amiable nature and was tenderly loved, not only by his parents, but by all who knew him intimately. His attainments were remarkable, as I can testify, for we read much together. He was an excellent classical scholar, but his favorite study was that of metaphysics, from which he was led to the study of natural science. But religion was the poetry and passion of his life, and though of a different belief, it afforded me pleasure to hear him discourse on the grandeur and benevolence of God. Sometimes when we were together in a deep green wood on a sultry summer afternoon, or sometimes walking at night beneath the glorious starlit sky, or sometimes, when reading the dialogues of Plato, some divine thought rising from the book like an immortal spirit from the grave and passed into his soul, then the tears would stream from his eyes, and falling on his knees he would utter praises or prayers in words of surpassing eloquence and with a voice of the sweetest melody. And often, how well I remember it now, often at such times his gestures grew wild and almost furious. His utterance was choked, and a strange bubbling sound came from his mouth. Dr. Scott, who was present on one of these occasions, watched him, I thought, with an air of anxiety, and I heard that he advised the Elliots to take away their son from his books and send him abroad with a traveling tutor. But Arthur disliked the idea of leaving home, and his parents did not urge him to go, believing that the danger was imaginary. So he remained, and things went on as before. One day he came to me in trouble. He had been reading the great work of Malthus, the Essay on Population, and said that it made him doubt the goodness of God. I replied with the usual commonplace remarks. He listened to me attentively, then sighed, shook his head, and went away. A little while afterwards he read The Origin of Species, which had just come out, and which proves that the law of population is the chief agent by which evolution has been produced. From that time he began to show symptoms of insanity, which disease it is thought he inherited from one of his progenitors. He dressed always in black, and said that he was in mourning for mankind. The works of Malthus and Darwin, bound in somber covers, were placed on a table in his room. The first was lettered outside The Book of Doubt, and the second The Book of Despair. He took long solitary walks in the most secluded parts of the estate, and was sometimes seen gesticulating to the heavens, sometimes seated by the wayside plucking grass and casting it from him with a strange tremulous movement of the hands. It was in vain that his good parents and the rector attempted to soothe his troubled mind with the hopes and consolations of a future life. He said that a wrong was always a wrong, and that no reward could atone for unmerited punishment. It was then I thought it right to express my own opinions on the subject of theology. But though Arthur could cease to love and revere, he could not cease to believe. I have often observed that men of powerful intellect, especially those of the poetic constitution, find it almost impossible to shake off the faith which has been taught them in their childhood. In Arthur's case, the boldest spirit of inquiry and a remorseless power of induction was allied to a rigid habit of belief. If he could have closed his eyes in common with so many inquirers to the barbarous element in nature, or simply dismissed it from his mind,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?